introduce new products when they come in. 2 years after going out on his own, Timothy's company crossed the $1 million sales mark, with projections to hit $2.5 million to $3 million by the end of 2017. You know, I make sacrifices and crazy decisions every day, knowing that it's all going to work out. Now it just becomes routine. Owning your own business sounds really, really scary, and it's a lot of responsibility. But Gary was like, what's the worst that could happen? Go for it. The market will tell you if you've got it or not. Incidentally, Timothy's mother is incredibly proud. My mother is in tears every time I tell her about some new accomplishment or a project that I've done or a milestone I've crossed. It's just been, you know, really great.
Work. I've audited a lot of people over the years who on the surface seemed to be doing everything right. They established a good niche. They were personable and interesting. Their content was on target and valuable. Yet, they expressed frustration that they weren't meeting their business goals. When I looked closer, I'd see that they were still playing golf or tweeting about the previous night's Walking Dead episode. Let me make this clear as I can. When you first start out, there is no time for leisure. And I want to actually break again here quickly. There is no time for leisure if you have massive ambitions. If you're telling me you're going to be a billionaire, it's just hard to watch The Crown and play mobile games. It, you know, your ambition has to be matched by your work ethic. And way too many people are like, I'm going to retire and run my own business. And they don't realize how much that means you need to suffocate everything else out. If you just want to make, you know, $7,000 in side cash by having an awesome Star Trek podcast, well, then you can absolutely watch TV and hang out with friends. But if you're literally trying to make your life, you have the audacity to live your life this way, it's going to come at the expense of almost everything else. And of course, family matters and all that matters, and sleep habits matter. I don't want you to get sick, but I'm telling you, leisure, leisure's day is over if you're going for it. There's no time for YouTube videos or shooting the shit in the break room or an hour and a half lunch. That is, of course, why entrepreneurship is often seen as a young person's game. It takes a lot of stamina to get a personal brand and business off the ground. It is a lot easier to devote all your time to a new business endeavor when you're 25 and single with no one to answer to but yourself. Still, 95% of the people listening to this book, even the young ones, probably have some kind of obligation. College loans, many are likely still in school, mortgages, child support, elderly parents, or dependent families. Most probably already have a job. Maybe you've got a flexible schedule because you're driving for a rideshare company or working part-time or nights. But most of you are working 9 to 5 or even 8 to 6. Your only prayer to one day live the crush it life, therefore, is to deploy ungodly amounts of work from 7 p.m. to 2 a.m. Monday through Friday, plus all day Saturday and Sunday. Ideally, you'll be building your business around the thing you love to do for fun and relaxation, so it won't feel like you're losing your leisure time. The only additional thing you'll have time for is your family. They deserve to get the best of you. So make sure you don't let the work creep in to all of your time with them, unless you can make them part of it, which would be wonderful. Bring them in on the adventure with you. Many people interviewed for this book have done this. Rodrigo Tosca hired his sister to help him build his video production business, and they worked out of his bedroom in their parents' home. Jared Paulin and Lauren Everts both regularly featured their grandmothers on their blogs. Rich Roll's children and his wife Julie are a constant presence in his videos and photographs, and the couple are listed as co-authors on their first cookbook. When Brittany Zaber books a mother-daughter Mother's Day branding opportunity or photo shoot, she puts a portion of the fee into an account set aside for her daughter, because without her child, those opportunities wouldn't exist. Since she turned 9, Chad Collins' daughter, Jordan, has run the trivia events conducted at BrickFest Live, the nationwide Lego event that grew out of the Lego YouTube channel they built together. This is what the modern-day family business can look like. You have to decide how you're going to spend your time. Start by blocking off the hours you must spend on your obligations. Your job, your kids, your spouse, your aging mother. If you're serious about crushing it, every minute not spent on those obligations should be spent producing content, distributing content, engaging with your community, or engaging on business development. Steven Marinaro, his Instagram is The Salon Guy, who was a hairstylist, a DJ, a fireman, and a fugitive recovery agent. And I gotta just laugh on that. I'm hope they let me like flow up there. I'm gonna keep that. Yes, a fugitive recovery agent before becoming YouTube's The Salon Guy, one of the largest professional hair channels on the platform, was relentless in his quest to build his brand. He says, if you sit on your butt all day, waiting for things to come to you, nothing is going to happen. Once just a vlogger who might film himself demonstrating hair cutting techniques, his dogged persistence led him to being featured on reality TV episodes, making appearances on Good Morning America and Fox News, covering the Oscars, and becoming a fixture at New York Fashion Week events, where he interviewed celebrities and designers. He went from earning a total of $20,000 4 years ago to being able to charge thousands of dollars per month to offer media services to brands. Do things. Create content daily. Biz dev daily. Meet with two or three people per day who can get you awareness, distribution, or sales, somehow closer to your goals. DM people on Instagram with offers to collaborate. We'll get to that later. You should be taking these actions 12, 15 hours per day. If you're working another job, you should be cramming as much work as you can into the 3 or 4 hours you have for yourself per night or day, or if you work night shifts. And don't forget sleep. 6 to 8 hours of sleep per day or night is ideal for most people. It's not about the sleep. It's what you do when you're awake. Just make every minute of your remaining 16 to 18 hours a day count. Do you think this kind of relentless work ethic sounds unhealthy? Does it sound like too much? Pay attention to those feelings. Self-awareness is vitally important. Crushing it is about living on your own terms, equally satisfied with your income and your life. You will get no judgment from me if your goals are modest. I have obnoxious ambition, but I don't think everyone else should. And I don't want anyone to think I've got a mold and expect everyone who reads this to force themselves to fit it. But please, if you're not willing to do the grind, for God's sakes, don't complain when your business doesn't grow as fast or as big as you want it to. Maybe you spend 2 hours a week volunteering at the animal shelter or the food bank, or maybe you decide to join the cycling club. You go out to movies. You play mobile games during your flights. It's all fine. That's fine. It's probably what makes you a better person. But then accept that your ambitions are humbler than you originally thought and be good with it. Not everyone should try to build a business as big as it can get. The truth is, you can't do it all. So you're going to have to make choices. Be practical. Raising your self-awareness and suffocating any self-delusion is a crucial piece of keeping you on the path to success, however you define it. Crushing it follows the laws of thermodynamics. Whatever energy you put into something will manifest itself in equal amounts when it comes out. Sometimes that resulting energy gets harnessed to move muscles or machines. Sometimes it dissipates, unused, into the ether. A successful entrepreneur is one who puts enough energy to move the gears and executes well enough so the work isn't wasted.
How I'm crushing it. Dion Graham, digital architect. Instagram, at Dion. Dion Graham was a tennis pro. Now, he's Diddy's digital director. He's only 31, but already he has one of the most coveted jobs in the marketing world. That's what personal branding can do for a person. This story starts in 2008, in Miami. During the day, Dion was teaching tennis. At night, he was spending too much money at the clubs and doing young people stuff. He noticed there was a void in the marketplace. Clubs wanted to market only to a certain type, white, Hispanic, etc., and while they liked having hip-hop parties because the revenue was good, they shied away from projecting the image of having a heavy hip-hop crowd. No marketing company was focusing on clubs that catered to an urban or hip-hop audience, so Dion decided he would. He created the nightlife website City Never Sleeps. By offering to market the club brands on his site, he circumvented the owner's reluctance to prominently market their hip-hop nights. Partygoers got access to their photos, and club owners got access to patrons. People loved the site, so he knew he was onto something, but there was no money in it. But Dion says that was kind of his fault. I was just trying to make deals and make moves for a profit. I wasn't trying to build a brand. I wasn't committed to the branding process. I was committed to try to make money. It wasn't until he started to dive into crush it principles and focus on building a brand for the long term that things started to turn around. He started being more selective about the caliber of clubs he worked with, turning down money if he didn't think the club was on brand and would lead to bigger clients. All my decision-making changed. The reactions I was getting from people changed. And not coincidentally, the checks started to get bigger. He'd been engaging people on Twitter and Facebook, but not as much as he should have been. He started watching Gary Vee. This guy has all these followers. He looks like he has a more successful business than me, but every day he's on social media, talking to people, giving them advice, giving them free content. So why am I not doing that? He doubled down on the engagement. It was 24/7. Literally anybody mentioning anything. I would join conversations, reply to everybody. If it was 2 a.m. and there was a popping party going on, we were in those conversations, letting people know about other parties in the city. There was no room for anything else. After landing a contract with a prominent nightlife group, he felt secure enough to quit his day job. The site's popularity rose quickly until his was the biggest platform catering to the urban and hip-hop market. He was approached by Ciroc Vodka's marketing team, Blue Flame Agency. They asked, "Did you make this site?" "Yeah." "We've paid people $75,000 to build a website." I said, "I'll do it for $10,000. I just wanted to get in the building. And he did. Blue Flame Agency hired him, and from then on, he was busy with project after project. For 2.5 years, he brokered deals with Hennessy, LVMH, Louis Vuitton Moet Hennessy, any brand you could think of that would want to reach the urban nightlife consumer. In 2015, Aubrey Flynn of Combs Enterprises offered Dion a position as his digital director, working with 8 different brands, including a tequila, a TV network, and a music label. It's a busy life. Dion has a family, so a lot of the work is done after his 3 kids are asleep and before everyone wakes up. His inbox has been flooded with requests for speaking engagements since his mention in the May 2017 issue of Entrepreneur magazine. He's got massive ambition, and nothing is going to get in his way. I'm definitely going to have a digital agency similar to what Gary's running, doing what I do for Sean Combs with many different brands and celebrities. Sometimes I go to these meetings and you kind of get a different look just based on being a young black male. That's actually been the hardest part, getting taken seriously by the corporate world. That's why it's good to be aligned with someone like Sean Combs, who fights for that. But it's definitely a different conversation when I go into these rooms than for, say, Gary. I walk in the door and they definitely get surprised. You can tell they were thinking or looking for someone else. It's just something I gotta deal with. Can't use it as an excuse. The most important thing is to be fully committed and to block out any noise, because nobody has done what you're attempting to do. And the only way to get it is to put the blinders on and push forward.
Attention. Where are the eyeballs going? What are your customers talking about? What are the newest trends in your field? What are the biggest controversies? You have to pay attention to everything. One of my great advantages has been the ability to see where the attention is shifting, even as my competition is looking elsewhere, usually backward. Knowing how to spot underpriced and underappreciated attention is a key influencer skill. People have always dismissed or underestimated the new thing, from radio to TV, from the traditional internet to the new social network-oriented internet. They're the same people who believe that Hollywood, not YouTube and Instagram, still incubates the biggest stars. As anyone under the age of 25 will tell you, they're wrong. Don't become so comfortable on one platform that you don't take the time to develop solid skills on the others. On the other hand, don't cling on to your favorite even when it's become ineffective or overpriced. Keep experimenting, even when you're sure you're doing it right. Your willingness to risk discomfort will save you in the long run. There are a lot of you whose competitors were mastering Instagram 5 years ago just in case it got really big, while you were still debating whether to get an account. Don't make that mistake again.
How I'm crushing it. Andrew Nguyen, Brand with Drew. Instagram, at Brand with Drew. My market started on Facebook, then jumped onto Twitter. They got away from Facebook, then jumped onto Instagram. They got away from Twitter, then jumped back into Facebook and Snapchat too. Where the attention goes, so goes Andrew Nguyen. Andrew may follow the eyeballs, but he has always marched to his own beat. At 17, he tried to follow a traditional path and please his immigrant parents by accepting a scholarship to a small school in Hampton, Virginia, with the intention of studying to become a pharmacist. By the end of the first semester, he was failing almost every class. Thinking it might suit him better, he switched over to a 5-year MBA program. He didn't tell his parents. It was summer before he finally confessed. Naturally, they were livid. They also pointed out that if he was just going to get an MBA, he could go to school in their home state of Maryland and get his degree for a lot less money. But Andrew wasn't willing to leave Hampton because he had already started making a name for himself there, first as a barber. Andrew had learned to cut his own hair from his father, who had attended barber school after arriving in the United States from Vietnam. When Andrew realized he was in a dorm full of men who needed haircuts, he saw opportunity and hung a barber sign outside his door. Business was good. Sometimes he cut 10 or more heads per day. He was also gaining a reputation as a DJ. He'd noticed that the most popular DJ on campus was a senior. Someone was going to have to take his place when he graduated. He thought, why not me? He used his barber money to buy a set of speakers and some DJ equipment and had them sent to the dorm. He started out doing a few events for free, again building his brand, until the reigning DJ noticed his potential and took him under his wing, making the necessary introductions to get Andrew good-paying clients. I truly felt this was something I was meant to do. I was meant to stay at this school, meant to meet the people that I was to meet, meant to grow these businesses. I got to the point where, once I realized that I truly believed in this vision, I was willing to do whatever it took to do it. Andrew's mother and father were not pleased and essentially disowned him. He was on his own, without even enough money to pay for lodging. He wound up living in his car and working in the school cafeteria so he'd have access to food. He became a reservist in the U.S. Marine Corps to help pay his tuition. Eventually, however, he built his DJ brand into a thriving 6-figure business, serving the campus and the city. His predecessor-turned-mentor, Taylor Austin James, would become better known as DJ Tay James, Justin Bieber's official DJ. Andrew didn't have to cut hair anymore, but he was marked by the months of homelessness. Saving money became his priority. He decided to use his MBA to get a job that would allow him to build up a financial foundation, as well as teach him the logistics of the corporate world. He took a sales and marketing job with Pepsi. At the same time, he decided to start his own marketing agency, the O Agency. My passion wasn't barbering or DJing. My passion was branding myself to become this DJ, this facade, this brand. There's a psychological quality to branding and marketing that's sometimes hard to quantify. You have to care and show people the quality of who you are and what you do. To test his knowledge and skills, he also decided to develop a marketing plan for his friend Bakari Taylor, a trainer who had earned some local notoriety for his brand, Body by Bakari, through a series of free boot camps he had held around the DC area the summer before. Taylor had the skills and charisma. Andrew had the business and marketing background. Together, they launched a big branding initiative, an East Coast No Excuses Tour, to help build brand awareness. The tour was a huge success, but it almost broke Andrew. That was the hardest year of my life, even past sleeping in my car and going into the Marine Corps. I knew that most businesses fail, I knew that the odds were against me, and I knew that I was not supposed to make it, so I was waking up at 4 or 5 in the morning to work 12-hour days for Pepsi, then working 6 p.m. to 2 a.m. putting in time for the O Agency and Bakari. And I was still DJing, too. Thank God Pepsi made energy drinks, which Andrew could get for free. Within 1 year, he was done. He quit the DJ business and put in his 2 weeks' notice at Pepsi. Within 6 months of launching the O Agency, he'd acquired his first NFL client. Today, he works with brands like 7-Eleven and Sotheby's. He read Crush It! Only about 2 years ago, but it was reaffirming. Hearing someone who's many, many levels ahead of me saying things I've already thought, the overall mentality is what really excites me. There was so much confirmation that I was doing the right thing. Until recently, he always prioritized the O Agency brand, preferring to wait until he had something to show for his efforts before putting his personal brand forward. You can brand yourself all you want, but if you don't have credibility or have not done anything, it's almost worthless. You can only sell something that's actually good. Now that he has been able to liberate himself from the business, he has started building his personal brand, at Brand with Drew. I'm at a point right now where I realize I will probably never be broke again in my life. I've truly found my passion, and one of the things I truly want to do is help out a lot of people who are lost, especially the millennial market. I would even go deeper by saying the minority market. That's the niche I'm really going after and putting myself in a position where I can really help people out. It's not about the money. I do a lot of things for free because I care more about impact than the monetary things. I don't even consider what I'm doing as work anymore. I enjoy what I do so much, I want to continue speaking and building my own brand and writing books and creating events that help people. I would love to do that for the rest of my life.
These are the first 7 essentials to a strong personal brand. I hope they sound familiar to the listeners of the original Crush It! It would be impossible to say these things too much or too often. You know how I know? Because for the number of times I repeat myself every year, there should be thousands and thousands more of you reaching your goals. The only explanation that such a large percentage of you aren't is that you're not taking my word. I exaggerate a lot for emphasis and entertainment. But I'm not kidding when I tell you that if you scrimp in any way on any one of these building blocks, you will falter. It's just the truth. There's an 8th essential. It's the only one that's seen some significant developments over the years. It's so important, it deserves a chapter of its own. 3. The 8th essential. Content. To monetize your personal brand into a business using social marketing networks, 2 pillars need to be in place: product and content. Crush It, Chapter 5. So meta, referencing my book and my new book. Having some fun here. Anyway, let's keep this going. Hope you guys are enjoying the book. It's still true that the right product and content will be key to building a vibrant personal brand. That part never changes. But how you develop your content and increase its reach definitely has. In Crush It!, I recommended simultaneously pumping out content onto all the different channels using a social media web service. Anybody remember Ping FM? It was only later, however, that I realized there had been another misunderstanding. I should have specified that I didn't mean you should pump out the same content across multiple platforms. Rather, I wanted you to develop high-quality native micro-content. For those of you new to this, this means content that is specifically and perfectly designed to suit the platform you're using to disseminate it. The audience on Twitter isn't looking for the same kind of content as an Instagram follower. A Facebook post will have greater impact if it's not just a cut-and-paste job from your blog or a 10-minute video that should actually be living on YouTube. Even if your audience overlaps amongst the platforms, people are in a completely different mindset when they're visiting one platform than when they're visiting another. If they're on Twitter, they're likely trying to keep up with the current news. If they're on Facebook, they're probably catching up with friends and family. They may go to Snapchat to consume a blip of entertainment on their lunch break, but they'll go to YouTube when they're in the mood to settle in for the evening for some long-form video, the same way that previous generations watched TV. You should be plotting how to adapt your content to appeal to every platform your audience might visit in a given day. Creating all that content can seem daunting, but it's a lot more manageable if you focus on creating one big piece of pillar content that can be splintered into other small bits of content. Content breeds like rabbits, if you will. Hey guys, I'm going to jump off script here for a second because there's some diagrams in the books. So bear with me. I'm referencing some images where I show, for a lot of you that follow me, whether it's Daily V or Ask Gary V, that's the big pillar content. Then obviously underneath that, there's 3 or 4 minute video clips or long form videos. And then on the third tier of content, there are those hundreds of pictures and videos that I put out on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and things of that nature. So the concept is illustrated by the chart I just described. And we use that at Vayner Talent, a division at VaynerMedia, that I established for influencers who are trying to grow their personal brands as big as they can. And so it's a service for the 1% of the 1%. If you're listening to this book, you're likely not there for Vayner Talent yet. But I hope I can teach you what you need to know to get you to a place where you're good enough, or maybe even use us one day, or even better, do it yourself. Anyway, we use a chart to illustrate our strategy of creating endless bits of micro-content from one content pillar, the one I described earlier. What those pieces of content actually look like, and the platforms you choose to use, is what you're here to figure out. More on that in part two. In Crush It, I also established that a great piece of content is a result of passion plus expertise. While the opportunities for people to become stars on various social media platforms have multiplied, to have a prayer of becoming even the 88th best whiskey Instagrammer, you're going to have to make sure that you are constantly updating your knowledge and providing information and insight that people can't find easily elsewhere. Moreover, you'll have to do it in a unique and memorable signature style. There's no way around it. Your content must be amazing. For some, that reality can be paralyzing as a snake bite. Here's the anti-venom. You don't have to wait until you're an expert or you've designed a perfect website or written 10 perfect blog posts before launching. Quite the contrary. Document, don't create. In 2009, I devoted only 3 lines to the idea that you can even make the learning process part of your content. It was an aside, a possible solution if you were young or building cred. Since then, I've come to realize that actually, the learning process should be your content. That means it's not a problem if you got more passion than expertise. Our best loved icons aren't the ones born to the manor who stayed in the manor. They're the ones who started out tinkering in their basements, who sold product out of the back of their cars, who rose and fell and rose again. The only ones we can't forgive are people who won't admit to their imperfections or own their mistakes. It's true that great content hinges on great storytelling and that every story in the universe has already been told, but not by you. You are unique, and you provide nuance, perspective, and details that no one else can. That means you don't just have the ability to generate unique pieces of creative. You are the unique pieces of creative. Don't worry about getting people's attention by plotting a poetic YouTube video or writing 4 drafts of a snappy Facebook status post. Instead, use every platform available to document your actual life and speak your truth. Let people learn who you are, then let them watch you develop into who you want to become. At the end of 2015, D-Rock, one of my video people, started following me around with a video camera everywhere I went during my work hours. The only time the camera was off was during sensitive meetings or when I went to the bathroom. I wanted people to see what hustle really looked like, how I could squeeze as much productivity into every minute, and incidentally, to prove that even when you've made it or you're important, you don't have to act like an arrogant jerk to the people you interact with on a day-to-day basis, especially those working in service jobs. It was important to me to address a frequent speculation I was seeing in my feeds, which was I was exaggerating how many hours I worked per day. I wanted people to see that when I said I worked from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday through Friday, I was serious. Moreover, I have been working those hours for about a decade. Most important, however, I wanted to provide a learning tool for the kind of people built like me. I learn by watching and doing, not by reading. It's not uncommon for me to get a message from somebody who tells me that they picked up something valuable from watching me interact with people on the screen or from a random rant that I offered from the back of a car. In most cases, I'm almost positive that that moment meant nothing to anyone else, but to hear that, on that day, I was able to help one person means the world to me. I can't take a meeting with every person who wants my advice, but I can teach by example and let them learn from that. None of us can predict with utmost certainty exactly what's going to happen to us. We will probably meet the people we arrange to meet, but we could also have random encounters. We will probably have the conversations we have scheduled, but who knows where those talks might go. Documenting guarantees that every encounter and every engagement is captured so I can ensure that I'm never caught off guard when I experience a moment that could spark a valuable piece of content for my followers. Documenting has liberated me from the pressure of having to create all the time. Use Snapchat, Instagram stories, YouTube videos, and Facebook Live 3, 4, 5 times per day to share the world through your eyes. Let your audience meet your cranky uncle. Let them see what you're eating for lunch. Let them follow you as you slog through the workout you love to hate. Invite them in when you move to your first post-divorce apartment or your college dorm. Take them along on your vacations and business trips. Think of yourself as the star of the show and the production company. Is everything about your daily life inherently interesting and new? In the right hands, yes. It's not easy to make a personal documentary, but it's a hell of a lot easier than trying to produce Modern Family. And which do you think will get done faster? What's the cost? It's worth a try. Maybe you'll hate it. It took me several months to get used to having a camera follow me around where I went. And maybe you'll fail. But you'll be able to build the audience that earns you $80,000 a year or $380,000 a year, which can come through the ads, affiliates, personal speaking engagements, books, sponsorship deals, and other ancillary income earning opportunities that come from having a strong personal brand. You never know what you're going to put out that inspires someone important to reach out to you. People who see your work will come to you with ideas and offers and partnerships. They will buy into you if you give them the right story. At the very least, even if you don't become the next Kardashian, you'll likely find that you can healthily supplement your current income doing something you find interesting and fun. Documenting to build a personal brand is an especially good tactic if you're already working a job that you want to leave someday. Build your brand and gain traction in your niche before you ever need to make any money, so that when you're ready to step out of your current job, your brand is there to hold you up and carry you to your next opportunity. Now, this tactic solves only one hurdle: how to build cred when you don't have none yet. However, it cannot help you if your content sucks. Sorry, there's no skirting the fact that any success you achieve will be predicated on the quality of your content. Don't think that you can put out mediocre videos and blogs and get anything but mediocre results. Just as you can't think putting out half-assed effort will get you even halfway to where you want to go. That said, just because you suck now doesn't mean you're always going to suck. Many of the entrepreneurs we spoke to didn't know what they were doing when they first started vlogging or podcasting either, and it showed. But they worked at it every day, analyzing their content, engaging with their audience to see what resonated and what didn't, and studying other personal brands to see what strategies they could adapt for themselves. They practiced their craft as intensely and methodically as a surgical resident practices her stitches or a pre-professional basketball player practices his layups. Documenting will keep you honest. It makes me laugh when I see a 19-year-old and a fresh college grad anoint themselves on Instagram as an entrepreneurial expert or a social media life coach. Like hell they are. Very, very few people have earned the right for those titles. Young girls will put up profiles announcing that they're beauty experts. No, they're not beauty experts. They're beauty opinionators. You don't get to call yourself an expert until you've put in the work. And the market decides, not you. When I was a kid, I would sit next to my dad in the car and tell him that I was going to be the wine expert to build the biggest liquor store in the country. I couldn't drink, so I spent those years, until I was 21, tasting things like tobacco and grass and all the things that I would read in wine books to develop my palate. And that was all while I was learning the business. It was only when I was of age and sure I had something of real, unique value to offer customers that I went public and started building my brand around my expertise. I was 30 years old and had been in the business half my life, and I had tasted hundreds of wines per week for a decade. If I could give some advice to my 17-year-old self, I'd tell him to turn on the camcorder and capture every minute of his training. How fantastic would it be to be able to share the first time I tasted dirt? I could have filmed myself tasting 35 different Merlots and telling the audience, someday I'm going to be able to tell you which one of these is which, blindfolded. And then 3 years later, I could have filmed myself blind tasting these wines in a row and correctly identifying the Merlots. And then I could have created some content that juxtaposed those two videos and showed the world how far I'd come. It would have been honest, and it would have been great storytelling. At 26, I was going to be who I am today. It's a shame that the whole process of me getting there has been lost in history. Sure, I tell my story in the books and during keynotes, but imagine the detailed lessons I could have shared, the mistakes people could have watched me make, the learning curve I could have provided, if only I had thought of documenting my life in that moment. The beauty expert wannabes could do the same thing. Instead of going to the department store, getting makeup advice from the reps at the cosmetic counters, and then filming themselves regurgitating the information as though it was their own, they could film themselves asking questions at the makeup counter, educating their audience while educating themselves. Then they could build content with the new knowledge and refer to the video over and over. Documenting isn't valuable because it captures how interesting or not you are now. It's about prepping for those people who will watch in 10 years from today. Cassius Clay was only 21 when he declared, "I'm the greatest." But then he went about proving it and became Muhammad Ali. Why can't you do the same at a smaller level? Think about how you feel when you watch a clip of Justin Bieber singing when he was 12, or video footage of Michael Jackson rehearsing for the Thriller video in the dance studio with his dance teacher. Can you imagine if you could watch Vera Wang cut her first pattern and sew her first wedding dress? Or if you could be privy to George Lucas's thoughts as he developed ideas for his student films at the University of Southern California? Not the way we can now through a biography or interviews, but captured verbatim in the moment, before they could be subject to the mental editing we all apply to our memories over time. It's an amazing thing to see talent grow and to bear witness to the evolution of greatness. Someday you could be that kind of inspiration to others if you capture your journey. I'm also going to break out of here. I don't even know if I reference this later, but not everybody's going to be Michael Jackson and George Lucas. But just imagine seeing your grandfather or grandmother or great-great-grandfather or great-great-grandmother going through the process. It would just be incredible. It would mean so much to you individually. Documenting also gives you an archive to work with that can help you validate your early promises or, as I like to call it, earn your keep. For example, people thought I was crazy in 2012 when I said that Facebook stole Instagram when it bought the company for $1 billion. I get ridiculous pleasure releasing the footage now that, as of its last valuation, Instagram is worth $50 billion. And much more, in my opinion, by the way. Documenting your business ensures that you'll have many opportunities to say, "I told you so." I recently filmed a meeting with Kyle, a rapper Rolling Stone picked as one of the 10 new artists you need to know in 2015. We talked music and marketing and songwriting, and it was awesome. In 10 years, when he's as well known as Eminem, that video is going to be viewed thousands and thousands more times by his fans. For many, that will be their introduction to me. Even more awesome, for me. A lot of pseudo-experts will justify hidden agendas by saying they're just taking the age-old advice of fake it till you make it. But no one needs to do that anymore. The only reason people used to have to fake it was because they had to convince the gatekeepers, the agents, the directors, the publishers, the music producers, the talent scouts, to give them the shot they needed to prove themselves. But the internet plays the middleman role now, and the internet can't stop you from putting your work out there. Put your stuff up and see what the market has to say about it. Take it down if no one likes it, or keep it up for historical reference. Change it up and try again. Take risks and learn from them. Daniel Markham of What's Inside, the YouTube channel, which boasts 5 million subscribers, launched several video channels before he finally put up the one that got people's attention. Once he started gaining traction, he applied everything he had learned from his failures to improve his channel's content quality, user experience, and monetization strategy. There's another reason not to fake it. The only people who will fall for your act when you pretend to be something you're not are the exact same customers you're not going to want in 10 years or maybe even in 10 months. Simultaneously, you lose credibility with the top tier of customers you're going to need to grow and sustain your business. You're sacrificing long-term growth for short-term gains. And I think that puts entrepreneurs in a vulnerable position in the long term. Who's going to trust you when they know that you're willing to snow job the ignorant? It's not okay to trick people. It is okay to be a novice. I hope you understand the difference. It's exciting to watch someone thoughtfully, strategically, and intelligently come into their professional own. Embrace your newness. In many ways, it could give you the advantage. You will likely have fresh energy and enthusiasm more seasoned professionals don't. That's attractive. And admitting that you're still learning will give people a reason to check in on your progress. It will also make it much more exciting when you can finally say, "I told you so." Before I go into the next part, I want to actually cut out here for a second. This last part really just resonated with me tremendously. I am just watching so many people trying to become me on Instagram and YouTube, which is A, flattering, B, cool and amazing, but C, the wrong move, because so many of you are just parroting content and it doesn't come from a place of strength or experience. The real white space for all the people that are trying to be me, quote unquote, or anybody else, is this whole narrative of I'm learning. So many people come and have meetings with me, they learn, and then a month later or a year later, I see on their account them basically talking about the things we talked about without them ever executing or living it. Please embrace your newness. Have you ever been watching a movie or TV show when the kid who used to star in all the school plays and talk about making it in Hollywood suddenly appears on screen or seen the face of someone you used to know on the cover of a national magazine? It's almost impossible not to get worked up about it. Holy shit, I know him. He did it. From then on, whenever the conversation makes it possible, you will probably slip in the fact that you knew that person back when nobody else did. Now, as excited as you are, imagine how excited your old acquaintances, knowing that hundreds of his old classmates are having the same reaction, especially if he was mocked or put down for daring to think he had enough talent or smarts to be a star. Believe me, it feels good. It will feel even better if you've documented your journey up to that point so that people can see how hard you worked to make it happen. If enough of us start to document, we would completely destroy the myth of the overnight success. Put your stuff out in the public, so you have to live up to it. As long as it's valuable, you will know it's true. Don't judge it. Let the market show you whether you're good or not. There's always something new, and the only way to win is if it's your truth. Just produce, become the personality, and own it. Your natural gifts can only take you so far. If you want to be the best, you'll have to work at it, but avoid being a perfectionist. Perfection doesn't exist. It's totally subjective. We earn people's respect and loyalty when we let them see us up close and dirty. Knowing that should ease any misperception that you have to start the process fully formed. Remember, there was a time when Kobe and Beyonce still had to use their last names.
How I'm crushing it. Rich Roll, Rich Roll Enterprises, LLC. Instagram, at Rich Roll. It was an ordinary flight of stairs that set me, Rich Roll, on the path to crushing it. The year was 2006, and the 39-year-old had it all. A lucrative career as an entertainment lawyer, a loving wife who had enjoyed her own success as a fashion and interior designer, four healthy children, and a fabulous home nestled on 3 acres in Malibu Canyon. He was miserable. For years, he had blindly chased the promise of the American dream. He had everything going for him and played the game perfectly. I got into every college I applied to, Harvard, Princeton. I went to Stanford. I was a world-ranked competitive swimmer in college. I graduated from Cornell Law School in 1994. Everything was about get into the best school, study hard, get into the best law school, get the best law firm job, work hard, show up early, stay late, impress your bosses, get on the partnership track, buy the nice car. He accomplished all of this even while secretly struggling with a debilitating drug and alcohol addiction that eventually came close to ruining his life. Yet, despite achieving sobriety and all the material trappings of success, the happiness that he had expected remained elusive, landing him in the midst of an existential crisis. I looked around the law firm, and I didn't aspire to be any of the partners that I saw. I didn't want their lives. It's not that I disrespected them, it's just they didn't have anything that I wanted for myself. And this created a huge problem for me because I had invested so much time and money and energy, years and years of my life to get to this place, and I felt I was stuck. I didn't know how to get out of it. I'd never stopped to think, what would make me happy, or what is it that I'm passionate about, because that was just never part of the conversation. Then, the night before his 40th birthday, while climbing the stairs of his home, Rich started sweating and had to stop to catch his breath. He realized that the years of junk food and workaholism that had packed 50 extra pounds on his frame were taking their toll, hurtling him into middle age on a course to the same heart disease that had killed his grandfather at a young age. In that moment, his combined health and existential crises propelled him to make a massive lifestyle change. Literally overnight, he adopted a vegetarian diet and started running. Within 2 years, with the help of his wife, who was already a healthy living practitioner with an interest in Eastern healing and spirituality, he had embraced veganism and transformed himself from an overweight couch potato into a world-class ultra-endurance athlete. He had also left the corporate law firm and started his own boutique practice. It basically revolutionized every facet of my life, physically, mentally, and emotionally. I lost all this weight. My skin cleared up. I felt amazing. I had better mental acuity. I slept better. The sheer fact that I had changed so dramatically in a pretty compressed time period made me realize just how resilient the body is. And I got interested in trying to test the outer boundaries of that for myself. I started to think, if I could change so dramatically in such a short period of time, what other leaf could I turn over? While he felt great about how far he had moved away from the lifestyle choices that had sapped his sense of possibility, he still wasn't sure what it was he was moving toward. If he could have made a living as an endurance athlete, he would have. But he had a family to support and a mortgage to pay, and there was zero money in endurance events. Or so he thought. After placing high in the 2008 Ultraman World Championship, a double Ironman 3-day 320-mile ultra-endurance event in Hawaii, and becoming the first vegan to finish the race, the media started reaching out for interviews. Everyone wanted to know, how is a 42-year-old performing at such incredibly high levels on a completely plant-based diet? It was unheard of. Suddenly, Rich became aware that what he was doing might actually be of interest to someone outside his nuclear family. Rich had a MySpace and a Facebook account and had started using Twitter relatively early, but he was using these like the average human being. Now aware that people were interested in knowing more about his diet and training regimen, he suggested to a friend that they film themselves as they trained at a camp in Hawaii for the 2009 Ultraman World Championships. We bought one of those little flip cameras, and we started making daily videos about our training for this crazy race. We were like, let me show you behind the scenes. Here's what I'm eating. Here's how I'm training. And we would upload these to YouTube, just short little 5 or 10 minute super hacky amateur videos. But they were getting a couple thousand views. I couldn't believe it. It was while training for this race that Rich read Crush It. I was already starting to see the results of what these social media tools could do for me, and although I didn't know how they would translate into some kind of tangible career, I believed in their power. And I had faith that by continuing to double down on my devotion to them, at some point it would somehow pay a dividend. The book validated everything that was percolating in my mind and gave me a very practical and ultimately very doable roadmap to move forward. Perhaps even more important, I really took to heart something that Gary made very clear in that book and continues to make clear to this day, which is that you have to have the long view. I wasn't trying to cash in on a Twitter following to do a brand deal or anything like that. I didn't care about making money on social media. All I wanted to do was deliver valuable content, entertainment, information that would be helpful to them without ever looking for anything in return. Because I knew at some point, and that might be years down the line, I would be able to call upon them to come back around for me. In the meantime, all I cared about was trying to cultivate and tend to this flock. I wasn't trying to grow it as big as possible, but to make sure that the people who were paying attention to me and had taken the time to follow what I was doing received something of value that would be beneficial in their lives. Approaching it from a professional point of view and shifting my mindset to that of a practitioner was very powerful and empowering at the same time. He became more purposeful. Instead of just being lighthearted and fun about it, I really did think, okay, what is the purpose of this tweet or this video or this Facebook post? What am I delivering that is going to be of value, whether it's a smoothie recipe, a certain sort of strategy about training, or advice on how to be a parent and train for a crazy race like this and not get divorced? The following year, in 2010, Rich completed the Epic 5 Challenge, 5 Ironman distance triathlons on 5 Hawaiian islands in 7 days. He doubled down on blogging and engaging with followers, earning plenty of rebukes from those close to him for being distracted and not present. Rich's first chance to monetize came about in a way that 100% supports my theory that the number of our social media followers is secondary to the quality of those followers. Rich had been blogging for about 4 years when he got a call from Sanjay Gupta, chief medical correspondent of CNN. Turns out, Gupta had been reading the blog and he wanted to come to the house for an interview. Rich suddenly realized that his days of anonymity might be over. I thought, oh my God, millions of people are going to see me on CNN? I should have something available on my website for people to buy if they're interested in learning more about how I've done what I've done. So I literally pulled an all-nighter and created an online cookbook with my wife's amazing vegan recipes. In 18 hours, he had used his rudimentary Photoshop skills to pull together some photographs and recipes and created an ebook, listing it on his website for $9. The interview went viral, and the blog post he wrote for CNN was number one on the network's homepage for 3 days straight. That little $9 e-cookbook that Rich edited overnight paid the family mortgage for about 2 years. Shortly afterward, Rich was offered a $150,000 contract for his first book, Finding Ultra. I realized that that book was going to be the fulcrum that could leverage my new life completely. So not only did I work incredibly hard to make that the best book possible, but also I worked doubly hard on marketing it once it was done because I realized if I didn't put everything that I had into getting that book out there, it would just come and go like so many books. And then I would have to go back to being a lawyer, which was the last thing I wanted to do. Rich was relentless, writing blog posts for anyone who would let him contribute, appearing on any podcast that would give him a slot, accepting every single interview he could get, and speaking in front of any and every group, even if his audience was only 4 to 5 people. He also recruited his social media community. I did call upon my audience to say, okay, here's this book, Help me get this out. Be my foot soldiers. You guys know how much content I've delivered for you. If you've gotten anything out of anything that I've delivered to you, I'd really appreciate it if you could help me get the word out about this. The day Finding Ultra hit bookstores in 2012 was the day Rich decided he was done practicing law. Sure that he was now positioned to command sizable fees for his appearances, he let his bar membership lapse. Despite his popularity, however, the demand still wasn't there. Without his earnings from the law practice or other consistent revenue streams, even with the money he earned from the book and his speaking engagements, the couple wasn't bringing in enough to support the family long term. The following years were scary and lean. Because I have a law degree from Cornell and a college degree from Stanford, it'd be very easy for me to backpedal into a cushy, well-paying job. So for me, the most difficult part was to say no to that and to stay the course, even when we were 48 hours away from our home being foreclosed on, even when I couldn't put food on the table, even when my car got repossessed. I made a lot of mistakes, and it could be argued that I was imprudent in some of the decisions that I made. 2013 was a very hard year. There were some dark times when everybody I knew was telling me that I was crazy and that I was being irresponsible. He managed to secure a short-term job helping a friend launch a media platform for a new eco-business venture in Hawaii and move the family there. A big podcast fan, Rich launched his own, the Rich Roll Podcast, another platform where he shares his personal insights and gives his audience a chance to hear him discuss issues and ideas with interesting guests. It would become hugely popular and retain a consistent spot in the iTunes podcast top 10, yet it would be more than 2 years before it would grow to the point where he could monetize it with ad revenue. All the while, he continued to put out content on his blog and YouTube channel. Rich admits that when he suffered self-doubt and started to question his judgment, it was his wife, Julie, who kept him going. She kept telling me that I had to do this, urging me not to lose sight of the bigger picture. When I had my dark night of the soul and thought, this is insane, what am I doing? She was the one who said, you gotta keep going. We were sleeping in a yurt in Hawaii, and still she'd say, we'll work it out. The family moved back to Los Angeles, and things started to turn around. The bank allowed them to renegotiate their mortgage. Rich's audience continued to grow, and he started getting invited to appear on more prominent podcasts. He booked more prestigious speaking engagements for companies like Goldman Sachs. He secured a second book deal, and The Plant Power Way was published in the spring of 2015. His reach and popularity has spread so wide, he's now considered an influencer's influencer. Rich's story has a fairy tale happy ending, but he's quick to reiterate that the only reason he is where he is today is because he went all in and had a spouse who was willing to go all in with him. He is deeply aware of the sacrifices and hardship his family endured while they waited for him to find his way. I had to work my butt off for many years to get to this point. I had to be willing to lose the house to pursue this dream and reconfigure my relationship to material things. And I could not have done it without Julie. She always held the belief that it was going to work out. We risked everything to be here, everything, and it was all worth it. But it wasn't easy. To this day, my 13-year-old daughter doesn't want to go back to Hawaii because she associates it with trauma. I have two boys, now 21 and 22. It was rough, but they were able to see their parents pursuing what they loved, navigating hardships together. I think something like this could break up marriages and families. In our case, it brought us closer together, and it actually taught the boys an important lesson. Like, look, life is difficult. You don't just get what you want when you want it. The fact that we were able to get through it and get through it together was an invaluable lesson to them. And I think that has allowed them to value what we have a little bit more in the longer view. They've said as much to us. I'm racked with guilt that my daughter associates Hawaii with trauma, but I'm a better parent now than I would be if I had had to go back to being a lawyer just so that I could hold on to a house so that my daughter won't be upset. What kind of example is that? I did this because I loved it. I was desperate to find a new way to live. I love doing the podcast. I love writing these books. And now, every single day, I get emails saying, You changed my life. You have no idea how much you've influenced me. And I'm sure Gary gets emails like that up the wazoo, but to me, the idea that that's where I am now from where I was not that long ago is absolutely shocking and stunning. And it's really intense.